Anyway, welcome to Trapo. It's the show that talks about stuff on purpose. I guess I'm Dustin.
I guess I'm Kai.
You remember your own name.
I guess this is Trapo.
Maybe. I don't know. I haven't verified it with my attorney.
Just a quick interruption, dear listener, to let you know the results of last week's poll. And it's official. 1981's Anthem by Toya has been inducted into the Trapo Essentials canon. Thanks to everyone who voted, and enjoy the show.
And today, I guess, we're going to talk about a pair of releases. We're not there yet, because we got to do something first. We're going to break you off. I'm not going to break you off. Before we get to the main event, we got a little something we call the exchange. Not an album exchange. It's just an exchange. It's an exchange of ideas, pop culture, ephemera. Why don't you start off our exchange?
All right. My exchange recommendation, an album from 2019 called Vagabond by Vagabond, Leticia Tamco. It had a kind of popular song, a song called Flood. But my favorite song is not one of the more popular songs. It's called In a Bind. Her Love is in a Bind. Cool, interesting. What you got for me and the rest of these people?
I recently read a story. Yeah, it's not going to be groundbreaking. It's a comic book. It's called Batman Last Night on Earth. I knew it existed, but I never read it. And it was written by Scott Snyder, penciled by Greg Capullo. The only time I knew Greg Capullo's work was when he took over the penciling duties for Spawn from Todd McFarlane. That was right around the point when I stopped reading Spawn. I was done. He was clearly a talented artist, but I never followed his career. When he was doing Spawn, he was trying to emulate Todd McFarlane's aesthetic, and his aesthetic, I was done with it. Ropey Play-Doh characters and shit. And he teamed up with Scott Snyder for a long time to do an extended run on Batman. I don't care about any of that. People talk about it. They love it. I'm glad people like it, and it exists. Enjoy it. Do what you want. But this comic, I guess it's not in continuity. It's just its own thing. Batman, he wakes up in an insane asylum. He doesn't remember shit. And he breaks out in this post-apocalyptic world. And his only real companion is the severed head of the Joker that is still alive in a fishbowl. He carries it around like a lantern. And it talks to him. He has to figure out this bizarre mystery in this post-apocalyptic nightmare world. This was supposedly the culmination of Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo's team up on Batman. This is the last story they wanted to tell, and it got a huge fanfare at the time. All that passed me by. I just found this on sale. You know what? That sounds fucking stupid. I'll read it. It's an easy read. It's entertaining. The artwork from Greg Capullo is great. I really enjoyed it. It surprised the hell out of me. Batman Last Night on Earth. I read it. It's fine. It's good. That's it. That's what I have to recommend. I didn't have anything exciting. That was just what I had in my brain.
Well, that's cool.
It is what it is. You know, it's not Vagabond. Well, he's like a vagabond, you know? He's out just trying to keep it together, trying to figure shit out. He doesn't have a home. He's got a head. That's it. That's all I got. I'm done. Talk about the brick house, the bricklayer.
Giant Palm?
Yeah, Giant. Yeah. You can call your music whatever you want.
There's a song called Giant Palm. It's just a bunch of cool, interesting, weird distortions. And
what are we talking about? I don't know. I don't care. It's music for people. I'm sorry. I just introduced your pick.
You did.
You can introduce your pick. You'll do a better job of it.
This album is by Naima Bach, Giant Palm.
That's Giant Palm lifts me to the sky and falls.
Singer-songwriter who made this with producer arranger Joel Burton. It just came out in 2022. I just randomly found it and started listening to it and thought it was fucking cool and weird.
Formerly of Goat Girl.
Oh yeah, I saw that. Fuck, like, Goat Girl. I don't know. We'll have to look that up. Apparently, there were over 30 instrumentalists also doing all of the random fucking noises that appear. Yeah, there's a lot of weird noises and instruments and distortions, and her voice and some of the instruments just kind of fade in and out. I don't know if this makes sense, but Giant Palm to me doesn't sound like an 80s song, but has an 80s aesthetic. It kind of feels like an 80s inspired song.
Some pretty buzzy keyboard work. I don't even know what you call that noise, but it's like a space noise. I don't even know what you call it.
Yeah.
Is that noise?
Oh, yeah.
It's very prominent in the title track.
Jetson's car.
Yeah. All I know is, what, that's, wow, space. I heard that in songs before where they want to convey Space. All he knows, I'm a mark for that. Hey, that's nice.
I don't know. Some of it you can understand. Some of it's just kind of weird the way there's a lot of distortion throughout the whole album. Interesting production on the whole thing.
It's like the way Giant Palm, like the title track, sets it up. I may have developed certain expectations for the rest of the album, and then the rest of the album just says, no, we're not doing that.
Yeah. And every time you think, like, okay, it's going to be, no. And then the next thing is like, well, this is not like that other fucking three songs or the fourth song or the five songs before.
The first, like, what, minute toll is basically just an acoustic guitar. And then a band shows up out of fucking nowhere. When it takes its toll. It's a different song. Okay. I don't know what you're doing, but fine. They say time will heal all, but I felt the darkness first, knowing nothing will be left but mold. Some people seem so undisturbed. That fucking makes sense.
Not a whole lot of happiness throughout the lyrics if you listen to them. The third song, Every Morning, I had to look up that because there's that kind of weird call and response part. Yes, I'm mourning. Are you crying? Every morning. You know what that song's about. Are you crying? Every morning. Is it for them? So it is. But you left them, so be it. This is like a weird emotional breakup. It kind of sounds like an indie singer-songwriter kind of thing. When the weird choral interjections talking back to herself. Whoa!
It very often sounds upbeat, but it's not upbeat. It's like the music is a trick. Hey, this sounds fun, and then you... No, she's talking about degradation and despair. Like, okay. What was bugging me, I got three tracks in, and her voice was driving me nuts because it reminded me of something, but I couldn't put my finger on it. Then I realized it was Angel Olsen. The only difference being that, and I'm not saying this as a dig on Naima Bach, I'm just saying that when you listen to Angel Olsen sing, she has several different gears, depending on what she needs to do for every song. Whereas with Naima Bach, she only seems to have one speed. But I'm not saying it's a dig on her, because some people just, that's how they sing, that's how they present themselves, even if it's just for that one album. Like, if she makes another album, she could do something completely different. But yeah, overall, I was still very happy with the experience, and I think she has a fantastic voice. I wanted more variation from time to time than I thought I was getting. Like, a few of the songs, they just kind of flatlined for me because of that. I can't even fault her for that, because that's just how she was singing. It just didn't work for me in the moment. I'm not trying to say that is a negative to the album overall. I just think there are a few times when it felt a little too monotone. Oh, it was Working. That was the one. She says it's a big fat waste of time, and that's kind of how I felt about the song.
Like the song Dim Sum a lot. Cool organ.
I thought it was Dim Dum.
Dim Dum, yeah.
I kept thinking Dig Dug for some.
Yeah. Dig Dug. There's all kinds of weird dreamlike fluctuations throughout that song.
I swear to God, that lasts like 90 seconds. That's straight out of Caroline.
Yeah. For some reason, this song made me think of the cover of the album, which is like this kind of weird stained glass artwork with this humanoid looking shape, green tentacles dragging it in. And there's like a sunset, but there's these black fucking fingers working its way through the sunset, kind of like this album. You just glance at it, you're like, oh, it's a cool sunset. Wait, is something dragging that dude into the ocean? Wait, the fuck is going through the sky? That doesn't look like a cloud.
And there's like seagulls or something on the
and then there's fringes just little birds
on the border. Yeah.
But for some reason, this song felt like part of the story of whatever the fuck is going on there. Like, there's some weird creepy shit going on, and I fucking love it. But I think that's one of the reasons I like this album. Several times I was like, didn't expect that. That was cool.
My favorite song on the whole album was Camper Van, and I didn't want it to be because I hate the name Camper Van. It's a banger, Kai.
Most of the songs are like 3 or 4 minutes long, and this one's like, I think this is 6 or 7 minutes long. Yeah, Camper Van has some other beautiful, weird, dark lyrics. Natural as the day you're born, natural as the day you'll die, and just as much as the corpse you'll leave behind. Oh, shit.
Whatever. It's great.
And then, yeah, instrumental is like a beautiful jazz party you want to be hanging out at. Fun music and people talking and glass clanking.
A lot of talking.
Just people talking and mumbling in the background, yeah.
It reminded me of those interludes in the Sweater song. It's like, that's what it sounded like, but it's the whole song. I don't know. I thought it was fine, but I was kind of waiting for something, and then it didn't do it. It just said, you know what? Fuck it. I'm doing my thing. Your expectations are inconsequential. We're just going to keep cruising. It was like, okay. It gave me a chance to kind of zone out for a while.
And the final track, O Moro, is not in English.
And we gave it away.
The words. Salve as belezas deste meu Brasil, com seus passados e tradições, e salve o mundo cheio de glória, com as escolas que falam no samba da sua história. Overall, I really enjoyed this album. I don't know that it was great. It had moments of greatness. Overall, I would say it was a pretty good album. What are your thoughts?
There were moments of greatness, to be sure. I didn't hate any of it, so that's a plus. Not every song has to be great for an album to be great. That's my struggle here. Like, if there was a ratio of good to bad, it's like, I don't know, it's like 70-30 great.
Set high standards here.
I don't know. I don't just want to let anything in. I also want to be like, I'm a big gatekeeper. I want to keep this out. Like, no, honestly, I wouldn't mind. I think it's kind of great, maybe.
With some of these albums, sometimes if you step away and then come back to it a month later, you know, we may revisit and it'd be like, this is the greatest fucking album I've ever heard. Or it'd be like, you know, I'm not quite as high on it as I was, but it's fine.
I think maybe we should let the people vote. We should give them a chance to weigh in with their own opinions. I would not be averse to this going in the canon, but I'm not sure if I would personally turn my key. But I don't know. I mean, look, if you say yes, I'll turn my key anyway. I don't care.
You know what? I like that. Let's let the people decide this one.
We've decided we want you to decide the fate of, what is it, Giant Palm by Naima Bach. So listen to it and vote. If you're listening to the Embedded podcast on the post, the poll will be right below it, so you can't miss it. The voting will be open for a week, I imagine. That's the new standard. So yeah, vote, listen to the album, listen to Giant Palm, and then you'll get back to us. Give us your opinions on the music.
Tell us what you think.
Go to the Trapple blog. Look, do you hate Giant Palm? Do you like it? Are you indifferent? Tell us. We want to know.
Okay, so we're going to talk about a marina.
We finished discussing whatever. What? I literally forgot.
Giant Palm.
Naima Bach's Giant Palm. And it's up to you, dear listener, to decide its fate. We're going to move on to the second barrel in our double barrel Good Greater Garbage extravaganza. It's a little album by an artist named Marina Herlop. Tripyet. Came out in May. I listened to it in May. I'm almost certain at some point in May or maybe early June, I was like, hey, Kai, there's this thing called Pripyat. You should probably listen to it. But I, you know, You know how it goes.
I maybe listened to it for a minute or two, but I didn't follow through with it. I looked at it. I remember because the cover has a cool snail sculpture woman face kind of in place of the snail face.
I read something back in May, I guess. Someone was reviewing the album. I tried to find it, but there was a review of the album that mentions, and I think this may have just been their supposition. They're trying to put the pieces together. They mentioned a connection between the album cover and an Indian fairy tale called The Tale of the Golden Snail. I've heard the Tale of the Golden Snail before, but they seem to allude the album cover was inspired by the story of the Golden Snail. And I don't know if Marina Herlop has heard the story. I imagine since she's studied a lot of Indian music theory, Carnatic music is something that actually pops up in terms of the structure in parts of Pripyat, because she studied Carnatic music, some southern India specifically. There's every chance she knows the story of the Golden Snail, but I just found it so bizarre that someone mentioned that in the review, because there's a picture of a snail on the album cover, like a snail with a human face, basically. But, you know, obviously, I mean, the snail's not golden on the album cover. It's kind of brown. But, of course, maybe gold is too on the nose. I don't know. I guess Pripyat is the name of a Ukrainian city.
Ukrainian city you were talking about?
A city in Ukraine that was founded to house the people who worked at Chernobyl. And obviously, I mean, 1986, they had to abandon that city. I guess technically it's a post-human city. You'd think that there's some kind of deeper connection. She named it that because she was trying to make some kind of deeper connection with her music. But no, she just thought the name sounded interesting. I mean, if you listen to the music, if you get into the music, most of it is unintelligible by design. She basically makes up words or strings words together that have no meaning because she likes the way they sound when she's trying to craft the music. And that's why she liked the name Pripyat. She wasn't trying to draw a specific connection to the city itself and to whatever thematic resonance it may have. She just liked the sound. You can draw connections if you want to. It was basically a coincidence. I thought that was kind of funny. She's Catalonian, but she lives in Barcelona these days. Her real name is Marina Hernandez Lopez, but I think Marina Herlop sounds cooler. First time I heard her music, I thought she was like Swedish or something. You hear Herlop, like that sounds vaguely Scandinavian. It's a stage name. But, you know, I don't know names. I mean, that sounded real to me. I would have bought it. I've listened to all three of her albums, but I listened to Nanook and Babasha afterward because Pripyat is the first of her albums I heard. And then I went back and listened to her earlier stuff. And, you know, it's good, but it's basically just piano and voice, which is fine. I have absolutely nothing against that at all. It's just after hearing this first, it's just a completely different thing. When she made Pripyat, she basically locked herself in a room for 2 weeks with some music production software, and she had no familiarity with it at all. She just wanted to learn it because she wanted to try something different. Both of her previous albums came and went. They made no splash. And she was starting to get to a point when she was thinking, well, can I be a musician? Do I have what it takes? She was really seriously starting to doubt her talents, even though she was a classically trained pianist. But that doesn't mean anything if you can't get people to listen to your music.
Right.
And so she tries something different. She locks herself in a room for 2 weeks and just basically scientifically breaks down this music software. And she experiments and she realizes that I can do whatever I want with this. It's a completely digital workflow. I can do anything. And that's how these tracks came together, these 7 tracks. And it's like, whoa, that's kind of interesting. It was nothing at first. It was just noise. I'm doing all this myself. I'm layering my vocals. I'm tearing them apart, putting them back together in these weird forms. I'm taking my piano, doing the same thing. I'm adding a bunch of weird ass fucking noise where I can. It's a brave new world we're living in. This is her Hail Mary pass as a musician, basically. Can I do it? And if not, I guess I better find a fucking day job. Turns out she doesn't need the day job because, you know, she made some weird ass fucking music that has actually caught on with a lot of people. And I guess it took 4 years to complete this album. There's a quote here that I think is actually kind of fun. I'm not very spiritual and I've never taken drugs, but there are experiences in life, like meditating or taking LSD, that show us something that transcends us and connects everything. Through music, things reveal themselves. That's a window into this person's musical identity. They're trying to reveal some kind of inner truth. There's no pretension here. They're just trying to reveal something through their art. And I think that's the best kind of art. It's trying to open a door.
And the music was the wire. I mean, I understand music can connect.
In the context you were talking about, it kind of makes a little more sense too.
A lot of music tries to connect on a literal level. The lyrics are trying to convey something to you. Nothing on Pripyat is trying to convey something to you on a literal level. It's talking to you on a more primal level through the actual repetition of sound. It feels kind of ridiculous when you try to articulate it because you're like, wait, that doesn't make any sense. That sounds like fucking like hippie talk. Music, like music that really works for you. It's not just engaging you intellectually. It's engaging you emotionally. Some of the best music doesn't even bother to engage with you intellectually because it doesn't care. It's just trying to connect with your soul. Basically, I know that sounds pretentious, but it is. That's what it's trying to do. It's trying to stir something within you. What is the album about? She said nothing. She says music exists on its own and it's capable of moving us without relating to our lives. It doesn't matter what the artist is trying to convey literally because it's all about your interpretation. What is she trying to say? It doesn't fucking matter. That's why she talks in gibberish. It's music that's weirdly challenging. I think that's kind of interesting. I've always found stuff like that very fascinating. Artists who come to you and say, my opinion means nothing. I'm just trying to make something happen in your brain. What am I trying to do? I don't know. I don't know. Oh my God, I feel something. Well, there you go. Do you hate it? Then I win.
It's a feel.
If it creates a visceral reaction in you, no matter what that reaction is, I think the artist would call that a success.
Maybe not the success some of them wanted, but success nonetheless.
Well, yeah, right. Pai, wai, pai, stai, la, so, dai, bi, pai, wai, na, na, na. I just like that there's a primitive quality to the music because it's beyond language.
There's not a lot of lyrics to look up on this.
Oh, no.
There are some.
I don't know if you call it non-linguistic, I guess, the vocals.
I would say it's non-objective.
No, yeah, okay.
Like a non-objective painting. It's a piece of art, but it's not a picture of a thing. This is like a non-objective song or a non-objective album. It's music, but it's not a guitar and some lady singing. That is not what this album is.
No. She's mentioned before that when she was a teenager, she encountered this music that changed her outlook on life because it made her uncomfortable. The music made her uneasy. The music was designed to put you off balance, and that changed her entire life because she realized if something's easy, maybe it doesn't feel earned. If music were a stoplight, well, I wanted to make it always yellow because there's that caution there. You don't know if you can stop or go. It creates this kind of uneasiness within you as a listener because not a lot of people would admit to something like that as an artist. Yeah, I want you to have a good time, like toe tapping and all that. But no, she's like, whatever. I want to make you feel weird. Basically, is what it is. Yeah. I want to make you feel weird.
This is to music kind of like Tim and Eric was to comedy TV. We're going to make something that kind of looks like comedy TV, but it's not here to make you laugh. It's really here to make you feel weird. And yeah. If you're fucking weird, it'll probably make you laugh a lot. But if you're not weird, it's going to make you feel so fucking uncomfortable you can't stand it.
Riding on my horse, riding on my horse, riding on my horse. Riding on my horse.
I don't know what this shit is, but you could turn it off, change it.
Like, literally us, like, the target audience for Tim and Eric, a lot of that stuff they make does that to us. Only we don't have the inclination to change the channel. We want to keep watching. That's the difference.
Like, yeah, and especially that show, because you knew in 15 seconds, something else weird was going to happen, and the next fucking skit was going to start, and then it would just cut to a weird fake commercial. That's the kind of ride Pripyat takes you on.
Basically, yeah. I mean, she's talked about how she doesn't want her music to tell stories, to tell you what to feel. She calls it the artificial language, what she does. She creates artificial language in her music so that the music doesn't become obscured with artificial emotion. That's how she put it. The language isn't real. She makes it up because she doesn't want the music to become obscured with artificial emotion.
Be tainted by emotion.
She's literally just trying to convey something, like I said, primal to the listener.
Yeah.
Because she's not communicating with direct language. It's like, oh, it's an experiment. Okay, that's interesting. Breakout, breakout, and the music was breakout, 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 and the music was the wire. Breakout, breakout, and the music was the wire. Breakout, 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 and the music was the breakout. There's a whole bunch of weird shit going on with this music. There are shades of Bjork. There are bits and pieces of Lyra Pramick in this music. But the most interesting comparison I found as I listened to Pripyat was Kazu.
Adult to Baby, yeah.
In terms of the production, the way the music is put together or torn apart, there are a lot of parallels, I think, with Adult Baby. Weirdly enough, in the what's the name of the first track?
It's all Abons, Abons.
Abons, Abons. I know it's her voice, but the way she processes it, it kind of sounds like Mothra. It sounds like Mothra.
Yeah.
The sound Mothra makes. Like, first time I heard this fucking song, I was like, wait, did she just fucking sample Mothra?
But she made something very similar.
Very, very similar. Sheldon Mantis. That track is just cool.
That's the banger on this one.
I called it the soundtrack to a new age fighting game because that's what it sounded like to me. Meditative aggression. It kind of reminded me of the end of The Matrix after Neo becomes the one and he's fighting Agent Smith. And he almost looks bored doing it. He's resurrected and Agent Smith is fighting him and he's pissed off. And Neo's just blocking every blow. He has like a very blank expression on his face. It's not like, wow, I can do all this. It's really fun. It's Zen. I've almost achieved nirvana, and I can kick your ass without even trying. Meditative aggression. I don't know. I like the whole fucking album.
Another thing I thought was kind of interesting that this album had in common with Giant Palm was in both of them, from one song to the next, you're going, what the fuck? What was that noise? Are those words? And sometimes they are, and sometimes they're not.
Sometimes they are words, but the words don't make any sense, so don't worry about it.
Yeah.
That's the reason why I brought it up again earlier this week, because I can't get this album out of my head. Pripyat by Marina Herlop made a deeper impression on me. I like it when I find music that just decides to completely do its own thing.
Yeah.
That's why Fountain resonated with me so much, and that's why at a different level, Midnight Star hit me so much, because Midnight Star is just like, fuck, I'm living in the cosmos, fuck you. I'm just floating out here attaining oneness with everything. I'm gonna wrap myself in a cloak of hyperpop and fucking blow your mind. Lyra Pramick comes along with Fountain and says, I'm just gonna make music that appeals to like the caveman inside of you. Just weird music that's trying, really aiming high. It's shooting for the moon. Maybe it doesn't hit the moon, but you know, fuck it, at least it winds up in the stars. That's one of the reasons why this music keeps coming back into my brain. Pripyat is just nuts. It's just nuts. When you realize the method behind the madness, when you understand what Marina Herlop is trying to convey, it adds a new layer to the music and it becomes more interesting because of that. I like this shit, Kai. I like weird music. I'm a weird asshole who likes weird asshole music. That's it. That's all I gotta say about Pripyat, the album that is not about a city in Ukraine.
I think it's pretty fucking interesting.
It reminds me of that Back to the Future when fucking Marvin Berry calls his cousin Chuck Berry on the phone.
Chuck, it's Marvin! Your cousin, Marvin Berry! You know that new sound you're looking for? Well, listen to this!
The fuck? What is this? Yeah, but that's it. I like Pripyat. I think it's a pretty pretty cool music. It's trying to do something. Maybe it succeeds in your estimation, maybe it doesn't, but I think at the very least it will challenge you on some level. And I think that's what it's all about. That's what I like.
Good, great, or garbage.
Let's be real here. Yeah, I'm not going to say it's good. I think this is great. This is something I've been ruminating on for months. So I can pretty definitively say I think Pripyat is great.
I'm kind of on the fence. It's sometimes great. I've only listened to it like twice. And I don't want to just send all of them to vote.
Like, I feel like I'm cursed at this point. Like, I can't get anything in the fucking canon anymore. I don't want to feel like I'm just trying to get anything out there.
No, and I think that I will like this enough that just for the sake of keeping it different, I will...
I don't want you to... this for pity.
No, I'm not doing it for pity. I'm doing it to make the podcast more interesting. Because I just don't want you to have to make polls for every episode.
I could.
I think I would be more than glad to call this album great. I didn't skip any of the songs either time. I listened to it. Your explanation helped sway me to call this album Pripyat. I'd call it great. Those are the ones that'll get me. And I guess that means by default, then
it doesn't have to go. I mean, I want to put it in the canon, but you can still say no. That's perfectly reasonable.
I'm fine putting it in the canon for the most part if I'm willing to say it's great.
Shit, it's the first time in a while. Actually, we've put something in the canon. Pripyat by Marina Herlop been inducted in the Trapo Essentials canon.
It's in, baby.
It happened. We got something in the canon. We have to end on a high note. So I guess we want you, dear listener, to join the conversation. It's alive and well on the official Trapo blog. That's traposhow.blogspot.com. Go to the blog. Find the post of your choosing. Leave a comment. Tell us what you think of the show. Leave us suggestions for topics for future episodes. Tell us whatever you want. We don't care.
We just want to hear from you. We actually find hate mail kind of funny. But you can also send us your social security number through our email. If you want to donate, just send your credit card info to traposhow@gmail.com and we won't use it.
Like, they won't use our email. They fucking don't.
They won't. We are desperate for your love on the email.
Yeah, but yeah, I guess that's it, dear listener. We had a good time, but I guess we want you to get the fuck off the internet.
The show that talks about stuff on purpose is a Fenderman Incorporated production.